there, and welcome to the weekly Support Ops Hangout. I'm your host, Chase Clements. This is a weekly podcast that's all about helping you deliver a better support experience to your customers. Today's show, we're going to be looking at a couple of different management models, along with how Buffer self-management, experiment, we'll call it that, turned out. But before we jump into that, let's go ahead and meet the rest of the panel real quick. They're probably familiar names to you by this point, but if you haven't ever seen the show or you don't know who any of us are, first up, we've got Carolyn from Buffer, who is going to be the hot topic for today. So, Carolyn, are you nervous at all going into a show kind of not all about Buffer, but definitely like Buffer influence?
No, we have no boundaries.
Oh, I love it. And then next up, Chase Livingston from Automatic, who is the other great Chase, if you've never met him before. How are things up in the Carolinas?
We're very good. Nice and cool weather here the past couple of days, so it's starting to feel like fall.
Yeah, give it time. Just give it time.
Yeah, it's supposed to be hot again, so it's the South.
And then last but certainly not least, Jeff Vincent, who is looking snazzy in his flannel today. That's awesome, dude. Where'd you get that from?
I don't know. It's fall here, though, or it's supposed to be. It was supposed to feel like fall today, so I decided to go flannel because it has been so hot here. I guess it's probably not even close to as hot as it is elsewhere, but it's been so hot here the last few weeks that a shirt like this would have been unwearable.
Yeah, I love it. You go off, you get married, and then all of a sudden you're wearing clothes that you didn't even know you had. You just like they magically appear in the closet.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Oh, all right. So this week, we've all been watching Buffer over the last couple of months as they tried out this self-management model that was completely flat. You might have seen mentions of it either on their blog or I think there was a nice piece in Inc.com that we'll make sure to link up to. Basically, they removed all the managers, they stopped mentorship sessions, and let people choose which areas of the Buffer product they wanted to be involved with. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about how that actually ended up working, what they learned, and kind of what we thought on the outside of all that, and what we can take away from everything at Buffer. So, Carolyn, let's start with you. I probably basically butchered that nice little recap of what all you did. But can you kind of walk us through the last couple of months at Buffer, why y'all decided to go with this model and kind of how it played out?
Yeah, no, you did a great job. I think the Wi-Fi struggles a little bit sometimes in here, so just wave at me if I need to repeat anything. We are a relatively self-managed company as it is because we're distributed. So we've talked a lot about that on the podcast in terms of it's quite hard to, you really have to sort of manage yourself anyway when you're distributed and you work remotely. So we already had that in place. We are already a startup with a lot of sort of a ask for forgiveness, not for permission mentality. So I think in a lot of ways we didn't quite recognize that we already had a lot of these elements, at least the elements that we were sort of excited by. So the full backstory is that Joel and Leo came across a book called Reinventing Organizations and some video about by the author of that book, and also had just sort of been exploring concepts like self-management and holacracy and just some sort of alternative management structures. Medium is an example of another company that's sort of exploring that sort of model. And what we ended up doing was either misinterpreting it or taking it to a level that ended up not really being super successful, and learned a lot of lessons along the way. And what that looked like was basically, you described it perfectly, it was sort of a no manager, no role, no title, no area sort of model where we believed that people would do what was best for the company and people would do would work where they needed, where the company needed them to work, which was true. So the sort of the underlying fundamentals about our beliefs about people were true, but a lot of the structure we found was there for a reason, and the things that kind of broke down, like a lot of the communication and things like that, where we were relying on that a lot more than we realized. So that's kind of the overview.
Yeah, and just so listeners can kind of get an idea of kind of management models at the rest of us, our companies too. Jeff, let's start with Wistia. Wistia is, you know, similar size and everything to Buffer. What's kind of the hierarchy set up there? I mean, we've talked about how you've got your support team, and then you were initially kind of in charge of that, and then you moved on to product and that kind of thing. So what does management look like at Wistia?
Well, I think we're still figuring that out. You know, early on, you have this very flat, this very small flat organization, and then you want to go to something that you don't want to go straight to something that's like managers, right? Everyone's like, oh, that sounds bad. So then you go to mentors,
yep,
right? Or like advisors, right? That's kind of like what we went through was, you know, we don't want managers per se, but we do want this person to be kind of like the lead. Right. But they're not actually going to lead people. They're just going to advise and like mentor people and help them do that. Then you add some more people and the business hopefully gets a little bit more regular, I'll say. Right. So like for us, I'm not sure how many people we had, but at one point we realized like we weren't going to close. Like the business wasn't, we weren't going to go out of business the next day. That we had discovered what our fit was, and what we needed to do was bring on great people who could help us double down on that fit, right? That was the next move for us. And at that point, I think we started hiring, not like an active decision, but we started hiring some different people who really did want that, not just mentorship, but management. They wanted to be really good at their job, and they wanted to be able to get context from other parts of the company and what other people were doing, without having to walk around all day asking people how it was going. They want to be really good at their job and just make sure that they're doing it within the right context. So at this point, it's different in different parts of the company, but on the support team, for example, we have a support team lead, and then we have two, I believe their title right now is champ lead. So we have two teams of customer champions, support people. And the champ lead's job is mentorship, performance management, and opportunity wrangling. And that's the entirety of their role. Their role is not to also be, the best support person as well. I think that's something where that mentorship thing can get really tough in those early days. So, yeah, I mean, I won't go into how all the different teams are broken down, but I think that's a good – that's our current scaling model, is that you have people who are individual contributors currently, and some of them may have interests in leadership and management, and then you have other folks who, if you're going to be a manager, you should be a manager, and that's not the scariest thing in the world for where we're at.
Yeah, I think with Basecamp it was kind of a similar approach too. You know, we had a pretty flat structure. We still do for the most part. Not a lot of layers or anything like that. I know for the support team in particular, we held out on that kind of team leader role until it was just absolutely necessary. When I got hired on 4 years ago, we actually had a rotating team lead. So, you know, there are some things during the week and the month that needs dedicated attention. So we had a team lead that rotated each week for the first year or two that I was, you know, that have been here at Basecamp. And then after that, we went to like this monthly kind of thing just to try it out. So I would be team lead for a month, and then Marissa would be team lead, and we would just, you know, rotate through everybody, which worked really well until we kind of kept growing. And I guess it was, you know, once we added in two other shifts, so a U.S. shift and then a EU shift and then Australia-Asia shift, at that point you gotta, you know, we're 10 people at that point, you kind of have to have somebody that's their dedicated role, that they're looking at big picture all the time. So that's kind of when we stepped in and had a designated team lead role. But I mean, even that, you know, you're talking that support team here, kind of at the bottom, team lead at the one step up, and that's kind of pretty much it as far as kind of a hierarchy. Chase Livingstone, when it comes to automatic's huge, you know. So I imagine you have a much, you know, much kind of maybe not more rigid, but definitely more extensive kind of management system going on. So can you kind of walk us through what it looks like at automatic?
Yeah, so I will say that I think this is something even as large as automatic is that we're still trying to kind of figure out, and it's definitely part of the growing pains of going from, you know, doubling in size or even more over the past couple of years. You know, when I started, there were less than 200 employees, and now we're probably going to be at 400 by the time we have the grand meetup in October, which is, you know, all over double in about 2 years. So essentially when I started, as a happiness engineer, the majority, not all, but the majority of happiness engineers were part of a single team in the company, and we just called it Core Happy. And then in that, we sort of split out into different squads, which are essentially like focus areas or that kind of thing. So one squad would focus on email support, one would focus on live chat, one would focus on forums, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But then obviously once things started, you know, progressing past, you know, 30, 40, you know, all the way up to now we almost have 100 happiness engineers, that sort of became, you know, with one team lead essentially for that entire group of people, that was a little unwieldy. And so essentially each of those squads with some tweaks split out into their own like official teams within automatic. So we're still sort of under a happiness umbrella with Spittle being like our lead per se, but he's not as much of a lead as he is like an advisor to each of the team leads that are on the newly formed, you know, happiness teams. And essentially those team leads, you know, report directly to Matt, with, you know, sort of Spittle not necessarily in between, but as, you know, sort of as an advisor to Matt and to all the other team leads, like a mentor, that kind of thing. So yeah, there's still not a whole lot of hierarchy, and the team lead positions, like you mentioned, even at Basecamp, are still, you know, sort of, they can be fluid. You know, it's something that, you know, if say my team lead, Jeremy, were to go on paternity leave or, you know, something like that where he'd be gone for a while, somebody else will just step in as team lead, at least while he's gone, and may continue when he comes back. It's not something that, you know, there's no anywhere that says, you know, he has to be the team lead or anything like that. So they can definitely be fluid positions as well. So, but that's still something we're definitely trying to figure out, and how that, you know, management structure works and that kind of thing, even with as many people as we have.
Cool. So that's the baseline, kind of where all four of our companies are at and kind of how we're doing it now. So let's dig in more on this kind of experiment that Buffer took on. So, Carolyn, back to you, since you're our Buffer person here. So you get into this, and it's, you know, a flat approach. It's everyone's self-management. It's everyone kind of, like you mentioned, kind of putting in where they need to be and that kind of thing. At what point did y'all start to realize that things like this just wasn't really working? Like, what was the flags that went up where y'all started going, you know, we've probably got to change this?
It was a couple of small things at first. So what happened was, like, it didn't all ground to a halt. Like, nothing fell apart. Like, what basically happened is that just everybody knew exactly what they were supposed to do because they were doing it before, so they kept doing it, except for the team leads and except for the, like, people who focus a lot on numbers. So we removed all goals. We, like, believed that the company would sort of go the direction that it was supposed to go. Like, it's this sort of very complicated concept of the company sort of having its own, like, destiny almost. And so what really ended up happening is we just continued on exactly the way we were. So we didn't fall apart. Nothing failed terribly. We just didn't grow, and we didn't really improve. And, like, we had been on this really cool trajectory of growth, both in terms of hiring and in terms of improving and on all sides. Product, not just happiness team, not just on the support side, but product, engineering, platform, marketing. And it all just kind of plateaued. And so as opposed to, like, if it had failed terribly and like everything had gone to chaos, in which case we probably would have like noticed it sooner. We just kind of like didn't really grow, and we were sort of wrapped up in this this experiment for a while, and so we started to realize that after, you know, a couple months, honestly, which we like disbanded the team of people who like works on the business. Like there used to be like a leadership meeting once a week or every 2 weeks, and we disbanded that because that felt like management, and like it's like really hard when you like remove the people who like make these decisions and think about these things. It becomes kind of hard to undo those decisions, which makes sense, of course. But so it all just kind of took a long time. And we also sort of changed the communication structures because there was no managers anymore. So people were talking to each other, but there was no real sort of, we didn't really realize how unhappy people were at first until people started to kind of talk to each other, and some people started to make these connections and say, like, it doesn't seem like people are really that thrilled with this experiment. Why is that? And the further we got into it, it all came to a head when we did self-managed salaries. when we were like, okay, we're fully self-managed now, like everybody just choose a salary, and like everybody was like, this is horrible. Everyone was like, I hate this. And I hate everything about it. And we started to ask some big questions about, like, why does everyone hate this? And why is this so terrible? And, like, maybe this is this is sort of a microcosm of a bigger thing going on. So that's kind of what the whole sort of point was, that we realized that it wasn't really working.
Yeah, salaries. That's hilarious, because I remember when you know, it was after one of our shows, and you had told the rest of us that y'all are thinking about doing this, and I think that was my first like, all right, so if I get to set my own salary, like, what am I really worth, and can I pass that number off like to other people?
Yeah,
you know, that gets a little, I guess it gets a little tricky. So you've got to have somebody up there making calls like that. Jeff, you know, is that kind of what, are those situations what your team leads and your WSDA management things are there for, so that, you know, is it, are they there to make tough decisions like how much everybody should get paid? Is that kind of the big purpose behind them?
That is a good question.
Because if that's the big sticking point with Buffer, like, if not that that's the only sticking point, but if that was the moment where everyone realized, like, maybe this isn't working, is something as simple as like determining someone's salary like one of the big questions that only management should be like looking at?
Oh man, I have no idea. This is something that I think is kind of specific or weird about us, but works really well. It kind of works in our favor, really, is that we have no idea about how any of this stuff should work, and we don't pretend to. And we know that we have not unlimited time, but a really long time to get it right. And so what that means is that we very rarely make sweeping changes. We very often make, like, very small process improvements. And what I would be lying if I said is that that means that no one is ever upset with the process, or that we don't ever like leave it in a really bad situation for a really long time, because we do. I think the thing that we think is like the most important is that you're able to say with conviction what the why is, mm-hmm, behind something and what your goal is in doing that. Like, how, and this is anything. I mean, we do this from the product standpoint, from like adding new features, to when we reorganize, and we've reorganized several times and it's not worked several times. But that if you have this group of people who are working, as Carolyn said, and I thought that's a really good way of putting it, they're working on the business. and they're making a decision about just about anything, and this is Wistia land I'm talking about, they shouldn't be doing it because MailChimp did it, right, which we've been guilty of. They shouldn't do it because Basecamp does it. They should do it because our read on what MailChimp or Basecamp was trying to do seems applicable to us, right? They put this process in place because they didn't think that people were bringing their full creative selves to work, and they wanted to encourage that, and that we were suffering from that as well, right? And the thing that makes really easy for us is if you put something in place and it doesn't solve that problem, then you can roll it right back, right? But if you put something in place and it brings up a whole new set of different problems, but it solves the one that you intended, then you have made this small change in your process, and you can then make a decision like, okay, do we keep what we have and try to solve the new problems in a Wistia way, or do we roll it all back? And I feel like if you only do, we made this change because it seemed like a really great idea, and like, why wouldn't you? Then when it doesn't work, you're kind of like, well, I don't know. I don't have no idea why it's not working. I don't know what we should do about it. And if you make a big sweeping change, then it's just like when you test something in marketing, there's just so many variables that it can be really hard to isolate those things out. So that's how we do things. And it can lead, I think, from certain perspectives to us being slow moving, right? Like, we don't chase a lot of shiny objects when it comes to how we do, you know, internal organization and process. But it also leads to a lot of, I think, good self-examination about these little details that really do mean a lot. And when you make a big change, it's like, you know, whatever, we're not going to have that meeting. Okay, fine, we won't have that meeting. But when you make little changes like, we just eliminated that meeting, and suddenly Chris, our CEO, and I feel out of sync, right? And we can deal with that. It's not just one of many shifting variables. So kind of long way of saying I have no idea what the answer is to your question, Chase. I feel like that's something that might be different on a company-by-company basis. But I do know that one thing that leadership is charged with is making hard decisions. I'll just put it that way.
See, this is the cool thing with moderating the show. It's literally like I just throw out a crazy question and y'all give a perfect answer to what we're really getting at. It's fantastic. It makes my job a lot easier.
Perfect.
So Livingston, has Automattic ever done anything since, I should preface this by saying, since you've been in Automattic, you know, since you'd have that first-hand experience and all. You talked about the teams being fluid, the team lead being fluid and that kind of thing. Have y'all made any big kind of changes to how the organization is working, or has it been more like Wistia, more of those smaller kind of course corrections?
Yeah, I think essentially, for the most part, it's been, you know, the smaller ways of, you know, doing things, changing things, that kind of thing. I guess the big thing that didn't necessarily affect anybody was the CEO switch we had a couple of years ago. Well, I guess it was maybe a year and a half ago, something like that, mm-hmm. When Matt took over as CEO from Tony. So obviously, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's a pretty big organizational change. But as far as like the day-to-day operations and that kind of thing goes, you know, most people didn't even notice, other than, you know, who they would go to if they, you know, wanted to go for a job or something like that. So, or talk about something like that. So yeah, it's nothing super huge, like, you know, eliminating managers and that kind of thing. The team structure has been in place at Automattic, you know, for the entire time I've been there, and shows no signs of going anywhere anytime soon. So, probably gonna stick around and make some, you know, maybe some small changes here and there, but nothing too major.
You know, you and I were talking before the show. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's that simple on some of this stuff. So, Carolyn, one of the things that has come up, you know, when we've talked to you about it, or when Leo, I think, came up a couple of times in Leo's article, that kind of thing. But the importance of mentorship keeps coming back up again and again. And you talked about how that's one of the things that y'all lost when you went, you know, managerless and that kind of thing. What did you envision was going to happen there? Was it going to be, you know, everyone's just, you know, kind of on their own, self-independent, self-study kind of thing? Or was it people were naturally going to pair up in mentor roles? Like, how did, how did you envision that was going to happen, and then what actually did happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will say that Buffer does not subscribe to the philosophy that if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Dude, that's the thing. If you grew up on a farm like I did, then it's one of those where, oh, that tractor's still running even though there's like Band-Aids and rubber bands holding it. Don't change anything, because the moment you do, the tire's going to fall off.
Yeah. We're kind of like, if it's not broken, how can we break it? That might end up teaching us something. So what we did was we removed the concept of managers, which also kind of naturally removed the mentorship. And what we put into place was a peer mastermind. So in the past, we had masterminds with the team lead, like Joel, Leo, Sunil, myself. And what we put into place was peer masterminds. So people paired up with somebody either in their role or not always, not even in the same team, but somebody who either might have close enough challenges that you can work together, or different enough challenges that you can see things from a different perspective. I don't know. We never really solved which one was better there. So that was what was supposed to happen. It was also, we were small enough that, we were still sort of operating as like teams, and we thought that people would have opportunities to self-study, like you said, maybe even more so, and people would have chances to try things that they maybe wouldn't have otherwise been able to try and all that stuff. The peer mastermind worked on a lot of levels. That was great. It took it from a top-down to sort of a share more openly with a peer, which was really valuable. And people felt like it was more of a partnership. It was more two-sided. People were, it wasn't just one person talking about his or her achievements and challenges. It was both. And so a lot of good came from that. The problem was that then all this communication stayed in these pairs. So in the past, when I was doing masterminds with, 4, 6, eventually 8 people, which was too many, by the way, but I knew it if 2 people were having the same challenge, and I especially knew it if 8 people were having the same challenge. And I got to say, oh, so-and-so is also working through a similar question, like, why don't you two work together on that? Or like, this seems to be a common theme, why don't I bring it up in the leadership meeting? And so kind of having a communication hub there was really valuable, and we didn't really anticipate that. I don't know why. I guess we thought we were so transparent that like people would just talk about these things anyway. Turns out that's not true. So what ended up happening was a lot of times 2 people had the same challenge or the same problem or the same discomfort or the same uh-oh feeling about something that was going on. And they would just talk about how to deal with that feeling as opposed to how to like really solve the problem at a company level. And so all these like pairs of people were having the same conversations and nobody was talking to each other. We only started really talking to each other when it was the salaries thing, because we were all like, I don't want to. It's too hard. I don't know how to pick a number, and it's so hard to, nobody wanted to go first because then you set the benchmark, like nobody was doing it. And so we were like, what do you think about this? And how am I supposed to do this? And then we were all like, actually, we're all having these same questions. So that was kind of what we had intended and what actually happened. Transparency is great. And a lot of times we had a lot of, we did have conversations in Discourse and in Hackpad and email that were affecting the whole company. But you just have to have your person. At least that's my feeling. That's what I've learned from it, is that if you don't have your person, if you don't have the person who you can go to, who is there specifically, that person, it was my job to help my team feel successful. And the difference with the mastermind peer partners is that it's not that person's job. It's just that person's job in this hour. So having somebody who you can really trust, and there was a lot of trust in the mastermind pairs, but somebody who you really trust who can affect change in a really meaningful way is super important. And just having somebody that you can just go to and not spend so much cognitive energy solving every single problem that the company is having. Like, we had all these people who were thinking about the same questions instead of going, I don't think this is right. You guys are going to talk about it? Great. Which, like, on some level is awesome because it means that everybody's really invested and they're thinking about these things. And we were all, like, super invested in a way that that we hadn't been before. But we're all also, like, duplicating a ton of effort and really exhausted and distracted a lot of the time. So that's kind of what happened.
Can I raise something? And I really don't mean to be overly critical or negative, but I think that you're absolutely right that Buffer's culture is, if it's working pretty good, let's break it real quick and see if we can learn from it. Mm-hmm. And it makes me, it's so strange, having not worked at many other growing companies, right? I've never really seen this play out, but we have so many problems. As a group of 50 people, Wistia has so many problems that there's really no, like, I think it's kind of like the analogy that Chase was drawing to a farm. Like, why break the tractor when the thing that, like, holds the cows in the pen is already broken and I already need to fix that? And then on top of that, it hasn't rained in, like, 2 weeks, so I'm not, like, super confident about what's going on with those, like, squashes over there. So, like, I kind of need to focus on that. And I guess I feel like we have so many things that we can work on and not enough time to even do any of those, that perhaps the hypothesis is we should still break this major thing over here, because that's how we would, like, 10x ourselves. That's how we would, like, have this major moments of growth. And I think that that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at that is, hey, let's take everyone who's, like, working away in our business and totally mess with them as an experiment. So I don't mean that to be overly critical, but as an outsider, from an outsider's perspective, that's what I'm reading into it. And I'm wondering what you would say about that.
Yeah, I would say I generally agree with everything you've said. In that, so that model is really successful in a lot of ways. Like, we just, like, break shit over on the blog and find out what happens, and we stop posting for a month and find out what happens, and we do this to the product. We just change something and see how people react and see if the numbers go up or down, or, you know, and I've fought some of these before because I also don't agree that when people are involved, it's great to just mess with them. And I feel that way about our customers as well. But, you know, there's certain tolerance for that type of thing when you're trying to learn fast, and when customers can get in touch and you can roll it back immediately. That's another one thing that you mentioned that I think is really key, or somebody mentioned. So I think you're right. Like, this model works really well, except I think what I personally have taken away from it is that it doesn't work as well when it's with people, and especially a bigger group of people. So when it was 20, we were all talking all the time anyway, and when it was 30, we were mostly talking all the time anyway, and now it's 50 and we're not, because we just can't. And I think it was around 40 that it started to break in terms of transparent communication. So between 35 and 40, like, everybody still was reading everything and still had time to, like, know what was going on in all the areas. And that stopped around, probably should have broken really at 35. I think we pushed it to about 40 until we finally went, we can't do this anymore. And so that caused a lot of changes in the communication as well, and that happened around the same time. So, you know, there's entire industries devoted to change management at companies, and that's for a reason. I think in general, people are resilient, and our company tends to attract people who want change and who want to experiment and want to like go through this a little bit. But I think what we've done in the past is like take the car and like try and like do this big swerve. And I think what we're learning now is like we can still go that direction, which is a different direction than we were going, but it just needs to be a much larger turn and like maybe just not quite as quick. So I think that's my response.
No, I think that makes perfect sense. And I also, as you were talking, it brought to mind an article that I will try to track down that someone wrote. It's someone who like used to be the VP of product or COO or something at Yammer, I think, and now he's just like writing nonstop for the First Round blog. That's just what he seems to be doing. But the article was about, he's like big on Holacracy, and one of the things that he mentions in there, which I thought was really smart, whether it's big changes or small changes, is there's a whole section on like what's going to break. Like, here's what's going to break when we make this change, and here's what's going to feel weird, and here's how we should handle that. Because we have the same thing, maybe not in terms of like our internal stuff, but in terms of like our product stuff, where it's like, when we introduce this thing, it's just going to go really well. It's just going to be great. It's just going to be brilliant, and everyone's going to love it. And there's nothing around like, how is this thing going to just go right off the rails? And when it does, what should we do about it? And especially
and
for people stuff. Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, so we're getting rid of your peer management thing. Like, that's going to feel weird because you're used to getting that feedback. And what should you do when it feels weird? Well, for one, that's kind of expected, like stick with it, but also you should do this and do that. And you're not only are you thinking through it because you have this like section in your little update, which is what he recommends, but also when people are not doing that and still saying that there's a problem, you're like, okay, people are just not even bought into this, as opposed to, oh, people just need to raise their hand more often. Like, why aren't they just saying something? Bunch of lazy people. So yeah, that just brought that to mind.
I would love to read that if you can find it.
I will find it.
I think the key here is people, right? It's Buffer attracts the type of person, typically speaking. I haven't met every Buffer. What do you call yourself?
We're always trying to come up with the right answer to that. We don't know.
Yeah, so I haven't met all of them, but they tend to be, you know, pretty open to change, pretty open to experimentation. And for me personally, so before I started in the sport world, I worked for a fast casual restaurant, and it was, so basically our store did a lot of catering. It was nothing for us to do double or triple the amount of catering that any other store in our district would that day. So because we had so much product and so much money and so much staff tied up in the store, we were not the first ones to start experimenting on stuff. That goal, you know, that kind of experimentation would go to a smaller store that was designed for that kind of thing. That was, you know, we hire people who don't mind breaking stuff and seeing what happens, don't mind change, don't mind experimenting, because you're going to find what works and doesn't work in the smaller store, and then you can figure out if it's going to work in the bigger store. And there's going to be a lot less frustration and anxiety and confusion and everything else when the people that you have designated as working at that experiment store are the ones that experiment, right? So I think we need companies like Buffer, because they're the ones where, you know, we end up learning a lot from them in a show. You know, because I guess that's the best analogy I've got. You know, you've got stores that service just experiment stores, whether it's McDonald's or Burger King or whatever fast food or fast casual you go to, there are stores that are just experimentation stores to see what new products will work, what new methods will work. And as long as your staff knows that, and as long as you, like Jeff was mentioning, prep them on what changes are going to happen, like fully prep, not just we think it's going to go well, but you know, here's where we think it'll work, here's where it might not work. So you've got to prep them, and then second, you have to make it easy for them to talk back to you, and talk back in the feedback sense, right? So it's not like Carolyn was mentioned with Buffer, where you've got two people saying the same thing, and they know they're saying it, but nobody else knows they're saying it, so nobody knows what's going on. I remember with our store, there was always, so each production line, and this sounds so weird to talk about food, but you know, you've got a line that's producing your lunch menu or whatever. they're right there next to each other, so they could talk back and forth, and the line lead would hear that. So it was very readily accessible feedback that they could work on really quickly. So, you know, if you're running a sandwich down the line and, like, I don't know, like the tomatoes are out of place, you can change that really quickly because you hear them talk about it on the line right then. So you've got to have that kind of feedback loop in there to make it really worthwhile to experiment. I mean, going managers, like I said, Buffer is one of those companies that I think can get away with something like that. Some companies just can't, and that's okay. I mean, that's just how it goes. We're at 45 minutes on this one, and I don't want to, like, throw out any other questions or anything like that. So I guess the last big one that I want to touch on, for companies that are, you know, for companies that already have some kind of management system in place, should they be thinking about some big experiments like this? So Jeff, we'll start with you and we'll just go down the line. You know, with your, you know, with Wistia, would y'all ever think about having a big kind of mix up like this just to kind of see what would happen?
Just to see what would happen? No.
Right. No. Yeah. So let me rephrase that.
Yeah, I wanted to say
it's not to see what would happen, but would you do it because you honestly thought it would be better?
Thanks.
Because you honestly thought at the end of doing all this, your company would come out, you know, maybe not 10 times better or 50 times better, but even like 5 times better.
Yes. I don't know how big we would go. I think that one thing that I've definitely noticed happening already is that the different major teams, so like marketing, support, product and engineering, that kind of thing, do have their own internal culture, and that those cultures are heavily built on trust. And to mess with that seems like you might unintentionally be undoing an awful lot of work that the people who work within those teams have been trying to put in place for a long time. So as you're saying that, you know, one thing I'm thinking about is, like, we do want these small teams where you might have an individual product, right? And there are engineering people, product people, maybe even marketing and support people who work on just specifically that individual product. And I remember Buffer had a very similar model at some point. That's like a possibility for us. At this point, though, we've decided that personal growth for the individual tends to have more to do with deepening their abilities within their current role than it is to, like, oh, encourage support people to wear 50 different hats. So they're, like, in this marketing, product, engineering meeting. That feels unfair because people think that the expectation is they have to learn all these different things when really we want them to be really great at what they do. So I don't think that that's coming. I think inside of a team, though, and maybe this is just because of what size we're at, there is change all the time. And big sweeping change is not scary within a specific team because you still have that really tight feedback loop. So maybe we'll grow past that, right? And then it'll be like inside of a team or something. I'm not sure what will happen. But that's how we think about it, is like the people closest to the problem are the ones who will know what you need to change to make it better. So to have, like, Chris Savage, who is not close to any specific problem within Wistia at the moment, coming in there trying to make a functional change to, like, make us better. Oh, if we just reorganize support, we'll answer, like, 50 times more tickets. No, not going to happen. That's just not how physical limitations work. so I don't see that happening anytime soon. But I do see that happening within teams all the time.
Livingston, what do you think about it as far as automatic goes? You know, is there any... Like, would automatic try a big experiment like this?
To be honest, I'm not sure if they would try it, but from my point of view, I think it would be a good thing. You know, things have been done sort of the same way for quite a while, and you know, now that things are growing, you know, we're definitely experiencing some growing pains and that kind of thing. So I think you know, now would be the time to try something different and, you know, make a big change. You know, I think a lot of people are sometimes sort of restless with the way things are, especially, you know, bringing on, you know, almost 100 new folks with the Woo acquisition and things like that. And so it seems like a perfect time to try something different maybe and see how it goes. So, yeah, I mean, from my point of view, I think it would be a pretty cool thing to try, but I'm not sure that it would actually happen.
Carolyn, you get the last say. So if you could go back 6 months or a year, right, knowing what you know now, knowing how the experiment would turn out and everything else, would you still push for it? Would you be a fan of giving it a shot?
Oh, that's such a hard question. We learned so much through this, and we improved a lot. So what we've done is we've brought back mentorship and a lot of other processes that we had removed. But we are also very different compared to how we were before. From the little stuff, like a lot of those let's cancel that meetings, to the big stuff of how we, what our identity is as a company and what we even believe about people and work and managers. So I can't really say that I like regret it. However, I think we're behind now. So what we're doing right now is trying to catch up, not just in terms of the growth that the company would have had, but like the interpersonal stuff. Like, people stop growing when the teams, like in their careers even, like forget about like the personal growth that comes from mentorship and that kind of stuff. Like, you don't even improve as a person who does support as a career if the company gets rid of goals and like kind of does this like, oh, well, float and do its best. So I think I don't necessarily, wouldn't necessarily say don't do it, but I think it just would have been better if we had at least had some process to undo it and keep what was good and get rid of what hurt a little bit sooner, because we lost one team member as a result of it. I'm shocked it wasn't more, in fact, but that was kind of right around the time of the self-managed salaries, that was like the thing that made everybody go, whoa, because that he said, you know, I feel like I'm not personally growing and I don't want to do that anymore. And I regret that the team, the existing team, spent 9 months feeling that way. So I can't say that it's not good to try sweeping change, and I can't say that that I don't think it was worth the experiment. But I think it's just so important to not remove the communication. So even if we had done everything else but just left some way for that to work, it would have been a much more successful experiment, and we would have been able to learn faster, which is the whole point.
So that's our take. Let us know what you think. Let us know how your company is doing it. Send us an email, supportops.co/contact, or you can tweet at us. We're at supportops on Twitter. That said, I will say, if you ever do, like, Carolyn, if Buffer ever does a big experiment like this again, you need like a big abort button or like a unicorn on it, you know, so you can just slam on it. Or, like, anybody can slam on it whenever they want and just be like, this is why we need to stop right now.
You know, I am known for hitting the abort button, and sometimes it's good to just do it. So I don't know. I don't think there's any abort button.
Oh, because I really think Buffer Office needs like an abort button. Almost like, you know, they've got the Staples That Was Easy button. You need like a unicorn button that you can just slam on. Abort, we're done. That's it.
Good idea.
All right, so before we jump into the last segment of the show, I just want to let you know, you've probably seen it on Twitter. We've sent it out a couple of times, and I think some of us have done it from personal accounts too. But we're doing a listener survey. So this is your chance to tell us what you like, what you don't like, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, all that kind of fun stuff. Head over to supportops.co/survey to take it out and just help us out a little bit. So let's wrap it up. Let's head into one of the real highlights of my week.
Yes.
It's this week's shout-outs. These are the things that are making us happy. So happy you want to shout them out from the rooftops and let you know you should be doing, buying, or just take our advice on whatever this thing is. Cool. So let's start with Chase Livingston. What's your shout-out this week?
So one of my favorite news sites, which is MacStories.net, made a pretty big announcement today that they're doing sort of like a membership thing with the site, so you get some like special content and so sort of things that a lot of news sites are doing these days. But they've already had a great newsletter, and so now that newsletter I think is going to be a benefit of being a member of the site. So I would definitely recommend checking it out if you're interested, especially in Apple News and that kind of thing. A lot of great content and you know, reviews and you know, commentary on what's going on. So I'd definitely recommend checking it out. It's one of my must reads.
Carolyn, what's your shout out for this week?
I have two. I want to shout out Pocket for introducing recommendations. Firstly, having tried that at Buffer and having the sun set at the feature, I know how difficult that is. I'm sure they did it in a much cleverer way. Ours were hand curated. I'm sure these are not. Well, I'm not sure actually, but I'm guessing these are not. And no easy feat, and they've not only done it, but they've done a great job. I did not have the problem of not having enough in my pocket, but now I have that problem even less. I want to read everything that's in my recommendation, so good job, Pocket. And the other one I just wanted to shout out was JetBlue. I think, was it you guys that I told the story to about how they just sent me a refund because the like screen didn't work. Anyway, they randomly...
Wait, you get a full refund just because the screen
didn't work?
No, sorry. Oh, okay.
It wasn't even a refund. I used the wrong word. They gave me a $15 like voucher basically for the next thing. They put it in my travel bank. At the time I thought that that was not necessary, but I was happy about it. And I just booked another flight, and it was sitting right there for me. They were like, do you want to use this $15? I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Boom, painless. So kudos to them.
Awesome. And Jeff, what do you got?
It's funny that I brought this up earlier because I didn't really think this through, but I would like to shout out another first-round article. If you guys don't read this like first-round, what the heck is it called? First-round review. If you don't read it, I'm just going to echo what Chase Livingston said. It's one of my most reads. so good. A lot of content. I will say they publish like probably two or more times a week, and it's all, they do a very good job of pitching it as really relevant. So the article that, I'm shouting out is just recent, but it made the rounds within Wistia. It's called Give Away Your Legos and Other Commandments for Scaling Startups. I think it's not complete by any means, but it is one of the better articulations that I've experienced of that feeling you get when you're bringing on someone and you're like, oh crap, they're totally better than I am at doing this. Like, how do I balance them doing it the way I would have done it and want to do it with them just taking it and running with it way better? And I've had a lot of practice like that over the last 5 years. I am still not good at it. So this article is going to be safely saved away in my pocket to read every time I get that feeling.
It's good to know I'm not the only one that uses Pocket just to like store stuff. Like, I know you're supposed to read it and then tap it, then like it gets out of the way into the archive. A lot of my stuff ends up as a so my grandfather used to call it a commonplace book or a common book. It's basically like he would literally, when he got magazines or newspapers or whatever, if he wanted to keep something and read it again, he would cut it out and like tape it into this book. And then we would sit there, be talking about something, and he'd be like, oh yeah, I just read this article about such and such. And he'd pull out the book and flip through it, and there it is. Like, that's basically what we do with Evernote and Pocket and everything else.
He sounds like a very interesting man.
He knew it was cool before it was cool. I'll just say that.
Original hipster. OG hipster right there.
My shout out this week, you know, Chase Livingston's probably in the same boat now. We're trying to figure out like this whole father dad thing before we actually like the kid gets here. I've been looking for something that was, you know, would help out as far as like teaching me stuff I didn't know about kids, but not do it in like that parenting magazine kind of weird way. So I stumbled across a great site called fatherly.com. Just read through a couple of articles in the last week or so, and it looks to be pretty good stuff I didn't think about before. Probably the smartest thing on there is they have this section that asks you what age is your kid, and it starts with expecting and goes all the way up to age 5+. So you can really like, you click it and it shows you, it's just categories, that's all it is, but they cleverly hit it right on the front page. It shows you kind of what articles are good to be reading and that kind of thing. So, fatherly.com. I'll have that and all the other things in the show notes. They'll be up at support.co. Big thanks again to our awesome panel. We tried not to beat up on Buffer too much this week. hopefully Carolyn will be back next week, even though we did a little bit. If you're feeling generous in the reviewing spirit and all that, head over to supportoffs.co/iTunes. That'll take you over to where you can rate and review us, or just leave it for us in the survey, supportoffs.co/survey. Let us know how we're doing and that kind of thing. We'll be back next week with a brand new topic, same crew, because these are the best support pros you'll find in the business. I'm Chase, and until we see you then, have an awesome week.